Okay, we are on the bottom of Chof Tes Amid Aleph in Gemara Sanhedrin. We're discussing the difference between a Macy's, a person who tries to take people away from Yiddishkeit, and other people, where other people, under certain circumstances, the Beis Din will try to make the claim for the defendant, even if the defendant does not make the claim, in an effort to acquit the person. However, when we deal with the Macy's, we don't make that effort. We don't help them out, and Gemara explained why. Because two things. Number one, the Torah says, specifically regarding a Macy's, you'll have no mercy and compassion upon him. Number two, they give you the historical example of the snake, where the snake, who was a Macy's, and Hashem could have claimed something on behalf of the Macy's, and he chose not to. So now, while we're on the topic of the original sin, so we bring up another issue in that area. Omer Chizkia, says Chizkia, Minayin shekol ha-mosif goreya. From where do you know that he who adds to Hashem's words actually detracts from them? In other words, if you make a mistake and try to be more machmir, or not even a mistake, if you say that the prohibition or whatever God says, you say it should be more than the way it should be, at the end of the day, it'll cause that less will be done. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, so Chava told the snake said, are you not able to eat from this tree? So Omar, she said, Omar Elohim, Hashem said, lo sochlu, you shall not eat from it, velo sigubo, and you shall not touch it. Now that's all the Gemara says. You have to know a little bit more background over here. The truth of the matter is, when you look in the Chumash and you see what Hashem commanded Adam himself, He told Adam, there's only one prohibition, you may not eat from it. Period. Okay, now, Adam thought he would be clever. He told Chava not exactly the truth. Adam. Adam told his wife, remember, when God gave Adam the command, Chava did not exist yet. So he's the only one who knew the real command. The real command was not to eat. When Adam told Chava about the forbidden tree, he said, God said we should not eat and we should not touch. Mm-hmm. Now that's not true. Now I guess Adam figured, well, I'll tell her not to touch, so she for sure won't eat. Yeah. Now that would have been okay had he said, God said not to eat and I'm laying a rabbinic law upon that. Mm-hmm. Okay, then you're not saying it's God's word. But he said, no, God said don't touch it. Well, the snake knew all that, so therefore, what did the snake do? He pushed her against the tree. She touched the tree, and she saw, lo and behold, she didn't die. So then the snake says, see, just like you didn't die from touching it, you're not going to die from eating it either. And that's how the mistake came. So that was the deal. So there you see, you don't add on. Okay, so that's one example. That's Chizkiah's example. Rav Masharsha Amar, Rav Sharsha says, I'll give you another place we can learn it from. Mehacha, from here, the measurements of the ark. What are the measurements of the ark? But it's really, the wording is where we get it from. It says, Amosayim Vochetzi Orko. The length of the ark is 2.5 cubits. 2 amos. Now, let's take a look over here. Very interesting. The word amosayim. Amosayim means 2 cubits. Now, what if I would take out the first letter from the word amosayim? What do I left with? You left with mosayim. Right? Mosayim, although it's not spelled perfectly. What does mosayim mean? 200. So by adding an aleph in front of the word 200, you're down to 2. Okay, that's the point. There you're adding to that, you see. So whenever you add, you decrease. Rav Ashi gives another example. another Hebrew word, Amar, regarding the korbanos that were brought, or rather the curtains in the Mishkan. It says Ashte Esrei Yurios. The word Ashte Esrei means 11. Okay, Asara is 10. Okay, see how you get from Ashte, but it's 11. So these are the coverings, rather, for the curtains. So Ashte Esrei means 11. Now, if you would delete the first letter, the ayin, take the ayin away, what does Shte Esrei mean? Shte Esrei means 12. 12. So by putting an ayin in front of it, you reduced it from 12 to 11. So there you see that we've got three examples where whoever adds, it really takes away. So this is an example of more is less.
So what about the rabbis who
were
adding
so
offenses?
So when the rabbis make offense, they're saying it's offense. That's the difference. If Adam would have said, this is what God said, but I think it's a good idea that we should make a rabbinic fence and not to touch it, then the snake wouldn't have pushed her against it because it wouldn't prove anything. But when you were adding to it exactly, that, and this is a biblical prohibition, you may not add to the mitzvahs of the Torah. So therefore, also the truth of the matter is the rabbis also have to be careful that even when they make a rabbinic law, they have to know, will this be too much for the masses to handle? Because if the masses will find it repressive, then they'll say, you know what, I'm not going to keep anything. As that can happen. You have to realize this, only so far chumras can go. So we historically, for example, pas akum is a good example of this. This whole idea, you have to eat kosher, that you have to do. If a goy cooks something or bakes something for you, the rabbis gave us a lot of stringency so we don't assimilate with goyim. We don't drink the wine that they make or if they touch our wine. We don't eat food that they cook. Even in our house, even if it's kosher, we don't eat the bread that they cook, that they bake. Anyway, the rabbis put on different stringencies. Okay, so the wine, people accepted. The cooking, they accepted. The baking, people said, no, that's too far. Because that's ready bread. In those days, bread was the staff of life. I mean, everybody ate bread every day. And people just felt it was way too difficult for us. And there was, so then there's a debate, even it filters out even till today, if we keep that or not. And therefore you'll notice on your products, it says Pas Yisrael. Right? Now, there's many, many who are strict and there's who are not. And through halacha over the time, there are rabbis who said if you could be lenient on it, because and the reason they felt that way is because if it'd be too many stringencies, you know, you could see what the knee-jerk reaction of the people is. That's part of when they make it, they say, whoa, everybody's going nuts with this. So I guess they didn't assess the situation properly. You have on the one hand, you're trying to limit your association with non-Jews and not assimilate with them. But when people find things to be so repressive, then they just give up the whole thing. So you have to know where you have to be strict and where not to be strict. So that again, if rabbis make too many rabbinic laws, then they're adding on will make Jews just keep less Torah. Mm-hmm. They're going to say, forget it. I'm just going to eat everything a goy makes. That's what happens. And it's unfortunate, like Pesach. You know, Pesach has a lot of chumras, you know, and although we are stricter to keep the chumras of Pesach, but you know, some people feel, if I can't eat what I'm used to eating, I'm just going to give it up. So that's that area. So the rabbis, if they're telling you it's an addition, okay, it's not going to make a mistake. But even then, there has to be some caution with that. All right, now taking care of that little sidebar, we go back to our main issue of a person confessing, saying he owes money. Does he mean it or not? And can he say, I was fooling you? So tomorrow goes back to this discussion of an admission made in the presence of bystanders who were not designated as witnesses. Omar Abaye. Abaye says, Lo shanu ela de Omar mishat anibach. The rabbis taught that an admission is not valid unless witnesses are designated, only regarding where the defendant afterwards claims, I was joking with you. Okay? In other words, if we didn't designate witnesses, and the guy says, yes, I owe you money, and then he takes him to the court, he says, no, I don't owe you. And says, what do you mean? You told me this. He says, I was joking. That's only when he says it. This is Abaye's position. Aval Omar, but if he says in response to the plaintiff, next page now, Chav Tesam Abayis, Lo hayu dvarim me'olam. The guy says, never happened. Ah, that's right. Now, let's say the plaintiff put two witnesses behind the bushes. So if he says, you owe me money, you know, yeah, I admit I owe you money. Okay, next day, and he doesn't know the witnesses are in. Next day, the guy says, you owe me, pay me the money. He says, no, I don't. He says, what do you mean, no? So if he says, I was just fooling you, then it's okay. He doesn't have to pay. Even if he produced witnesses, I was just fooling you. He's saying I was fooling you. But he's saying, we didn't talk yesterday. At that point, when he does that, look what the next two words are. You've now shown us huchsak kafron. That's a Talmudic terminology. It's established clearly he's a liar. So he's saying, "Oh, really? You didn't say this yesterday? Yeah, you can't prove anything. It was just the two of us." He brings out the two witnesses. Mm-hmm. I say, well, you know what? Here's two witnesses, and they can even say what color your shirt was, and what this and that and everything else was. At that point, we know one thing: he's a liar. Even if he'll say, well, you know, I really was joking. No, that's it, because now we see you're lying. I mean, you could have said you were joking; that was fine. But right? So therefore, if you deny that, makes sense. Therefore, he's not now. Now remember, he was never under oath yet. So the guy says, okay, I don't care. You can make me swear. And those of, we're just starting to learn the Rambam now about the laws of oaths. And the guy says, well, I'll tell you the truth now under oath. Forget it. So you don't have to lie first under oath to not be believed. If we catch you're a liar even before you were ever under oath regarding this case, so now he's finished. So only if he says, I was joking, but if he says, I never said it, and there's witnesses who can verify that he did say it, we know he's an established liar, and he now cannot swear. He cannot swear, and therefore he will have to pay. Okay. Now, that's one opinion. Now we have a dissenting opinion. Amar Rav Papa Brei de Rav Acha Barado. Rav Papa says name of Rav Acha Barado. Hachi Amrina Mishmei Rava. This is what was said in the name of Rava. Okay, what was said in the name of Rava? Kol Mili Dichti Lo Dichirei Inshi. People don't remember meaningless statements that they make. What does that mean? Well, let's think about this. I'm in the street. Chaim Yaakov comes over and says, "You know, you owe me money." You know, I says, "Fine, yeah, I do." Now, that interaction in and of itself has no halachic ramifications at all. And it's not like if he was brought into court. You know, if a Beis Din brings you into court and you have to swear under oath, you're not going to forget that. You know, but if a guy in the street says, you owe me money, and he says, yeah, I owe you money. Now, he can turn around the next day. Let's say he has two witnesses planted behind the bushes. And then the next guy says, you know, you owe me money. He says, what are you talking about? It never happened. He says, what do you mean it never happened? He brings witnesses. I didn't remember. Well, it's possible to say he didn't remember because it was not a significant event in his life. So people will say it didn't happen. You know, you have times people tell me, you know, we had my birthday party, so the kids were relating things about past events. Some I remembered, some I had no recollection at all what happened. And I'm sure they happened. Not everything you remember. That's it. So the same thing over here. So the fact that he denied originally, he denied the admission, doesn't establish him as a liar. because maybe he didn't really remember. So kol midi dikti, things that are not dikti, that are like nothing, meaningless, lo dechirin, she will not remember. So that's a descending opinion. So now it's a machlokes here in the Amoraic level. Do we say that the person is now an established liar or not? Okay. Now we get a story. Okay, Hahu da achmin le edim le chavre bechilte. There was a person, a plaintiff, who hid witnesses behind bed curtains. Okay, achmin means he hid, bechilte, behind bed curtains, to hear his friend's admission to liability. So this is what he asked him, and this is what he said. Amar le, so the plaintiff says, mona li biyotcha, you owe me $100. Amar le, he said, hey, yes. Okay, now he's not finished. The plaintiff says, Amar, he says, do you consent that Eri Vishachve Lehevi Alach Sadi, should the walking, the waking and the sleeping be witnesses to your admission? What does that mean? Okay. The claimant realized that the defendant would be unwilling to admit in the presence of designated witness, and he therefore attempted this ruse, hoping that the defendant would presume that anyone in the bed was sleeping and would allow them to be designated as witnesses. Had the defendant agreed to designate both the waking and the sleeping as witness, this admission would have been valid, since he was willing to risk the possibility that there were people awake in the bed, even after the claimant's question alluded to their presence. So he says, are you willing to admit in the presence of those that are awake and those that are asleep? Amarle, he said, lo, no. I don't. So now the next day, he takes him to court, right? And now makes the claim. So now, does he have to pay or not? So what do you think? You think no? Okay. Amar Rav Kahana, says Rav Kahana regarding that story, Amar Lelo, the defendant told him, no, I don't want to be witness, therefore his admission is not valid. Now, end of the story. Wait a minute. So now, Rav Kahana's ruling seems rather obvious, doesn't it? Yeah. However, the Gemara will shortly point out a lesson that is gleaned from it. So we'll have to hang on. Next story. Ahud Achmin Idim Bikivra Lechavre. There's another story the guy wants him to admit, but here it's in a graveyard, right, to hear his liability. Amarle Manali Biyatcha. You have $100 of mine. Amarle Hain. He says yes. So now he reinforces. He says, can the living and the dead be witnesses to your admission? Amar Leilo, he said no. They brought this case, and Amar Rav Shimon said, Amar Leilo, he said no. Again, same story. Doesn't seem to be any chiddush over there. Doesn't have to pay. Okay, now, from these two incidences, now a rabbi now makes a deduction from the incidents. And this is the relevant part. Although this is obvious, it's what is deduced from this is why the Gemara is bringing these stories. Amar Ravina, so Ravina v. Seima, and some say Rav Papa says, what can we derive from these two rulings? Shmami Namiha, we learn from this. Hod Amar Yehuda Marav, when Rav Yehuda Marav already said regarding a guy's prior admission, that the plaintiff has to say, Tzorech Sheyomer Atem Edai, that he has to say, you are the witnesses to the admission in order for the admission to be valid. When we said that that's so, where the guys got to know their witness, Lo Shana, that was only said, Ki Omar Lova, only when the debtor says it. Okay, lo shna ki omar. He's saying lo shna ki omar lo. It doesn't make a difference whether the debtor says it. The lo shna doesn't make a difference. Ki omar malva vishasik lova, or the creditor says and the guy is silent. Right, it doesn't make a difference. It doesn't matter him saying, well, okay, the debtor says, okay, I let these two guys be witnesses. Or if the creditor says, well, I want these two little witnesses, and you know that they're witnesses, and he doesn't say anything, it's to say, it doesn't make a difference, and then he is responsible for that. Right? That's what Rav says. Listen, so it's clear. It's two cases where the debtor says, appoints the witnesses, Or the creditor does it and the debtor is silent. Right? Now, taima de amar lo velo. The reason why we say this is because he says, no, I don't owe you. Then you could collect from him. However, aval ishasik, what if the debtor is silent? Hachinami.
Rabbi, you said if the debtor says no, you can't collect from him.
I'm sorry.
You mean he can't collect from him? If the debtor says no.
Time at Omer, lo, that it's invalid, he said no.
Means you cannot collect from him.
He reject, time at Omer, lo, va, lo. So it comes out he's saying, I won't accept them.
Then you cannot collect.
Right? When he said, yeah, then you can't, he says, no, I don't want them to be the witnesses. When he says, I don't want them to be the witnesses, right? So it doesn't matter who's bringing them, right? The guy's got to say, no. Aval ishasik, but if the creditor is quiet, hachinami, then that appointment would be effective. Because that's what we had in our case. The guy says, are you willing for the people sleeping and awake to be where? He says, no. So there he said, no. So that's obvious. But what if he was silent? What if the guy says, here, I have witnesses here. And the guy doesn't say anything. Then too bad. The guy could say, well, I didn't really accept him as witness. And you should have said. So that's what we draw out of these stories. That the fact that he said, no, I don't want them. It's the implication that if he's silent, then too bad. You have to accept them. Clear? So that's what comes out. So the only way the creditor can use the day before admission in court is these. We've got to have two things now. Clearly, there got to be people who are designated. Now, they can be designated by either the debtor or the creditor. Now, obviously, if the debtor does, then we know he accepts it. The question is the debtor, the creditor. When the creditor does it, it only works when the debtor says, yes, I accept them. If he's just
silent.
Now, no, and if he says, no, I don't accept them, then they're not accepted. But if he's silent, then they're also accepted. So that's the point. So in other words, you have to have, either he has no knowledge of these witnesses, where we won't accept the private, he can get out of that. Or if he says, I don't want them to be the witnesses, even though they're here. But if he's silent, then it's like he accepted and he's stuck. Okay, next story. Hahu dahava kore le kavroshu. Ah, here's an interesting story. There's a fellow who had a nickname. They called him Kav. Kav is a measure. It's a measurement of grain. They called it a Kav of debt, meaning he owed people a lot of money. Here's Mr. Kav debt. You know, the guy who owes people money. That's a pejorative, definitely. So they knew the guy was in great debt. It was well known the guy was in debt. Okay? Well, so guess what happens? Everybody knows him. So now he wants to dispel that. He doesn't want people, because every time he wants to get involved in a business deal to borrow money, you know, you don't borrow money from people who owe a lot of money. Can you lend me some money? When are you going to pay me back? Oh, really soon. Well, I heard you already owe about $50,000 of outstanding debts to 20 people in our shul. Whatever. Like, when do you think I'm going to get paid back? So he wants to dispel this. So what happens? So Omar, so this person said, Man Masik B, who has claims against me? Ella Plony and Plony, only so-and-so and so-and-so. In other words, word was around, he's in heavy debt. The guy's in heavy debt. He goes around, what are you talking about? I only owe Moshe and Aaron, each of them $100. That's all. You guys think I owe $50,000. What are you talking about? It's only two guys I owe money to. And he says who it is. I don't say in general. He says who it is. Moshe Schwartz and Chaim Green. I only owe them $100. That's the only guys I owe. Now, could be he owes them, could be he owes another 50 people. But that's what he said. Okay? Now, guess what? When these two guys heard that that's what he said, these two guys that heard, oh, those are the only two guys I owe money to. So, also, Tavu Aladina Kamehdi Rav Nachman. So now they brought this Kav Roshu. They brought him to court and saying, listen, he admitted he owes us the money. Right? He said that. Rav Nachman, Rav says, no, we throw... What do you say? No, they're witnesses that he said it. How did they know?
He said it to the person he wanted to borrow
It does. Word got out, man. He must have said it publicly. Everybody heard. There were witnesses who heard this, right? Because he wants people to know he doesn't owe money. What's it going to help to tell one guy, right? Whatever. But either way, there was witnesses. Everything, right? The guy said, "Listen, you said it yourself. You said it yourself."
I was joking.
Of course. So I'm Rav Nachman. Adam Osui Shalo Lahaspias Asma. A person is inclined not to make him appear satiated, like doing well. And even to invent a non-existent debt. Okay? In other words, it's common for a wealthy person to deliberately give the impression that he is a debtor in order to avoid the envy of others. That is the other side. Although in this case, the person's statement was intended to produce the opposite effect, that is to dispel his image as a debtor. We must nevertheless consider the possibility that he was afraid to announce that he was completely free of debt and therefore fabricate the story of these two loans so that he would appear to be of average financial standing. Yeah, but remember, he was known to be a big, heavily in debt. He was known to be heavily in debt. So now we could assume that we know heavily in debt. So why was he mentioning only two guys? So therefore, he really wanted to make it seem like he was doing not in debt at all. But he figured no one would believe that. Really, he would have said, "I don't owe anybody anything. Get out of here. What do you know? Everybody says you owe money." No, I really only own these two guys. And somehow from these two guys, the word got out that I owe many more, but I don't.
Why would this case be different from the "I was joking" case?
That's the exact same thing. Now, above, look at the commentary. The Gemara cited Bryce, which teaches that a defendant can explain away an omission by claiming that he admitted in jest. Mm-hmm. Oh, wait a minute. Here, however, the Gemara introduces a new theory that the person may have admitted in order to play down his wealth. So this is sort of joking, but it's not the same. Joking is like it just didn't happen.
Okay.
Why did you joke? Because I joked. Mm-hmm. Here he's saying it's because this new theory is necessary because the claim that one admitted in jest is accepted only in a case where the admission came in response to a plaintiff's allegation of debt. In other words, when do we say the thing of "I was joking"? If the plaintiff says, "You owe me money." Guy says, "Yeah, I do." Next day, turns around and says, "You said you owe me money. I was joking because you claimed to me. So I was joking because when you make a claim that I think is absurd, I will joke back to you." Here, it wasn't the claimant wasn't going to the guy. Somebody else was going, whatever. He was even there was no claimant at all. He's trying to borrow money now. He's got a guy. He says, "Earl, will you lend me money?" "Listen, Rabbi, I hear you owe a lot of money, everybody." "What are you talking about? I only owe two guys $100. Now, I wasn't admitting anything to you, but now word spreads. So now, why would I be joking to you? We only say joking in response to a claim, right? So there is saying, the defendant can reasonably claim that the plaintiff's unfounded assertion that a debt existed prompted him to respond jokingly with an equally unfounded admission. He says, "Oh, you're an idiot. You're telling me I owe you money? Well, you know, that's such a joke. I'll joke back to you. Yeah, I do." But that's when somebody came to you and you're saying, "What kind of chutzpah are you asking for me?" But that's not our case over here. I want to borrow money from you. You didn't say anything unfounded. In our case, where the admission was unprompted, the defendant's claim that he was merely joking has no basis. And the only grounds for dismissing the admission are that he may not want to appear wealthy. Conversely, the idea that one fabricated a story of debt in order to hide his wealth is realistic only in a case where one admitted the debts on his own. When accosted by one who claims to be his creditor, a person is unlikely to lend credence to the claim for the mere purpose of hiding his wealth. In that case, his only defense is that the observer of the claim prompted him to admit to it. So you see, they're totally two different claims. The only time we say we're joking is if the guy, we could say that the defendant perceived himself to be affronted. Mm-hmm. He says, "What a chutzpah, he asking money that line for me. So I joke back at you." We only say you're joking is you thought that the guy was having chutzpah to you. Mm-hmm. But when there's not the whatever other person didn't really initiate anything, so why would you just out of the blue be joking? So now we have to have a reason that's reasonable to say that you want to show you don't have a lot of money. which Gemara is going to bring stories, which brought race stories. The guy says, listen, when you lend me money, ugh, I owe so much money to people already. I owe Schwartz, I owe him, I owe that. There we could say he wants to make himself, he's not joking, he just wants to play his value down. Or here, where the guy's known as a heavy debtor, he wants to play that notion down. So what that's with, it's our claim for him, as opposed to just saying he was joking, he's just trying to get out of that.
Did they ever have documents for debts?
I guess there was no documents written here. If there were, then there'd be a whole different story. Okay. Let's try one more quick story. There's a man who has claimed a mouse who sleeps on dinarim, meaning he's a miser. In other words, he has all his money, doesn't benefit from it. He's as cheap as a mouse. Well, I guess that's what they called in those days. So, in other words, he was a really cheap guy. All right, now, now he's dying. He's dying. Some final words. So what is he going to say? He says, Planya uplanya maskvi zuzi, so-and-so and so-and-so have monetary claims against me. He's admitting he owes them money. Okay, that's a dead man's declaration. You'd think it would be admissible, right? He's going to die. People are going to go to his children now, his heirs, and say, you know, your father said he owed us money. Basar deshachiv, after he died, also tavinu liyarshiv, they go to the heirs and ask for their money. Also, lekame de Rabbi Shmuel bar Rabbi Yossi. They came before Rabbi Shmuel bar Yossi. Amrlo, he says, nope. Ki amrinan adam asi shalo. Oh, no. He says, yep. He says, ki amrinan adam asi shalo l'shvias. When do we say a person will not want to make himself look rich? Right? You could say, wait, he wanted to make himself look rich. That's only, when do we say that rule? Hani mil mechem, when the guy's alive. Yes. He doesn't want people to be jealous of him. When he's a healthy guy, he says, what do you want money from me? You want to borrow money from me? I owe this guy or that guy. Then we'll say he was trying to play his wealth down because he's alive. But if he's going to die, lo, we don't say that. We don't say that. Because why would he, what does he care? He's going to be dead in a minute. What are you playing around that you're not wealthy now? Doesn't make sense. So they said, he said the kids have to pay.
Yeah.
So what did they do? Paru palga. The heirs, in the meanwhile, paid half of the amount. Okay. In other words, they didn't totally accept the ruling. They accepted partially. So this was, they came before Rabbi Shmuel bar Rabbi Yossi, but I guess it wasn't really a court case. It was just they went to the local rabbi, and the local rabbi said that. I said, okay, here, half. But the other guy says, no, I don't want half. I want all of it. So now he schleps into court. Tavina Ladina, the claimants then went to the court to get the other half. They were kind of saying, okay, we'll make a compromise. Here, take half. No. Now we're going to a Beis Din. We want the whole thing. Guess what? Also, they come to Rav Chiya. Amr Laho, he said that he overturned the original ruling. He said, no. Just like a person doesn't want to make himself look well when he's alive. For himself, he doesn't want his kids to have to pay either. So he'd lie even on his deathbed so they won't go after his kids, so they won't think his kids are rich. So he's going to think, people are going to think the kids are millionaires and all these people with these quick, get-rich-quick schemes are going to bother him. No, I'm going to tell them I'm heavily in debt. You don't bother the kids. You do the same thing, and therefore they don't have to pay anything. But wait a minute, they already paid half. So the heir said, so the claimant said, should we go and return the money that the heirs gave us?
No.
They gave us half? So he says, no. Amrlo, he says, listen, the elder Rabbi Shmuel already ruled, and you know what? You don't have to return the half you got. And even though I disagree, but listen, it was a big rabbi who ruled, so interesting. Rabbi Chiya was unwilling to argue with Rabbi Shmuel's original ruling to the extent that he would extract the money that the claimants had already collected. Merely held them back from collecting initial monies. So it was kind of a compromise solution. Okay, we'll end it over there.